Sayarada Madhava Kunjabihari. Sayarada Madhava Kunjabihari. Jana Vallabha Giri Bharatari Jana Vallabha Giri Bharatari Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Amunatira Panachari Amunatira Panachari Jayarada Madhava Kunjabihari Madhava Kunjabihari Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 1, and the text for today is 53, which we'll chant responsively. Prasana Vadanam Bojo Nirsham Sram Nirapatrapam Manasa duyamanena Vihasanu idam abravit Prasana vadam bojo Nirsham sham nirapatrapam Manasa duyamanena Vihasan nidam abravit Prasana vadanam bojo Nirsham sham nirapatrapam Manasa duyamanenam Vihasa Nidam Abravit. Please chant. Prasana Padam Bojo. Nishasham Nirapatrapam. Manasatuyamanena. Vihasa Nidam Abravit. Prasana Padam Nambojo. Nisham Sham Nirapatrapam. Manasa Duyamanenam. Vihasa Midam Abravit. Okay, so the word for word, prasana vadana ambojwa. Vasudev, who externally presented himself as if very happy, nishamsham, unto the most cruel, nirapatrapam, shameless Kamsa, manasi, with the mind, duyamanena, which was full of anxiety and sorrow, vihasan, smiling externally, Idam Abravit, and spoke as follows. So the translation for text 53. Vasudev's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. Purport. Sometimes one must act duplicitously in a dangerous situation, or in a dangerous position, sorry, as Vasudev did to save his wife. The material world is complicated, and to execute one's duties, one cannot avoid adopting such diplomacy. Vasudev did everything possible to save his wife for the sake of begetting Krishna. This indicates that one may act duplicitously for the purpose of saving Krishna and his interests. According to the arrangement already foretold, Krishna was to appear through Vasudev and Devaki to kill Kamsa. Vasudev therefore had to do everything to save the situation. Although all the events were prearranged by Krishna, a devotee must try his best to serve the purpose of Krishna. Krishna himself is all-powerful, but it is not that a devotee should therefore sit idly and leave everything to him. This instruction is also found in Bhagavad Gita. Although Krishna was doing everything for Arjuna, Arjuna never sat down idly as a non-violent gentleman. Rather, he tried his best to fight the battle and be victorious. Om Agyana Timrandasya Gnanjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Rinjana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radha Vrindavana Ishvari Vrishavanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priye. Panchakalpa Trivyascha Kripa Sindhuvyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaham. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shumadhuvam Paraswami Tinamine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschacya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Just prior to this particular verse, we find that Vasudev is spending a few moments contemplating within himself. So his contemplation was such that he gave careful consideration to the options open to him in order to dissuade Kamsa from beheading his wife, his newly married wife. In fact, Vasudev had been thinking very deeply within himself just prior to this point that we've come to. So he was considering this very imminent danger. That sword was about to come very close to Devaki's neck. So his thought prior to this moment had been to think of a plan to stop Kamsa. So his thought had been first a personally very strengthening thought. So one has to boost oneself before one goes into something dangerous. So his personally strengthening thought was, at my birth, the demigods sounded drums, dun-dun-dubi. Therefore, nothing unfortunate can happen to me. So he first, put himself in the correct spot. And this is from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. For some verses prior to this, the 47th verse. So the thought that followed on this one for Vasudev was, and this is his thought, as long as he has intelligence and bodily strength, an intelligent person must try to avoid death. This is the duty of every embodied person. But if death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavors, a person facing death commits no offense. This is the 48th verse. So he's reasoning via a generalization. And that generalization, to put it in two words, is yavat buddhi. So as long as buddhi, so a person has power and intelligence, as long as that is there, a person's going to try to avoid death. So he takes the generalization and he applies it personally. I cannot use strength to avoid Devaki's death at Kamsa's hands, but I can use my intelligence. So this is Vasudev's internal contemplation. So we have the good fortune that we're actually reading his contemplation, and some of it is filled in by commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So these are the thoughts that are going through his mind. And this is what he resolves. He doesn't have the strength to, physically stop Kamsa, but he can use his intelligence. Now, if one takes a step back, Vasudev is able to restrain his senses, particularly his mind, for example. He doesn't consume his energy in anger, but rather he focuses his energy on getting what he needs to achieve, which is Devaki's life being spared. Now, in a situation where a person is unhappy, and you know, often one goes through this, rather than angrily, or one may mope and get angry and internally have angry thoughts, and in this way one creates greater inner turmoil because one is feeding angry thoughts. I recently had a devotee just relaying to me that, you know, she had spent an entire week having a particular angry thought, you know, just going over it and not moving from that angry thought. So so this, one increases one's inner turmoil through just staying with an angry thought. Rather, it's better to use an assertive approach because one is more likely to be successful, because then one is moved away from whatever the initial response might have been. One's moving forward creatively to try and resolve a situation. So I'm going to give an example. I thought about this situation because I had to go through it in, and it took a bit of while, a bit of time to process. So, somebody may do work in one's home. So, I've been going through this. So, it means that one doesn't know precisely how the work's going to be done. One assumes that the person is, you know, qualified, has ethical practices, is going to do things in a timely manner, is going to be conscious of trying to please one and doing the best one can. So, now, if it turns out that the job is either not efficiently done, or, for instance, it may even not even have been completed in the allotted time, but the money is taken. So one has to process this because naturally there's dissatisfaction. So so one could feel irate and think, this is so unjust, you know, the payment has been given but the correct work isn't being done. And, you know, sometimes even it's a very hefty hourly rate that one has to pay because that person's time is considered precious, but the, what is received in that time is not commensurate with the amount that's given. So, so one could feel entitled and say, you know, I have the expectation of having this job completed. So one can then start having certain thoughts. What a lazy person, didn't get this done. And naturally, you know, it's correct to have an expectation of a properly completed job within a certain time frame. But then one has to negotiate something. That's the step one then, in order to move away from, you know, thinking, what a lazy fellow, one has to move forward, and it's negotiation that's required. So, so one can call the particular person that was doing the work, and one could complain and insist that the work be completed since more than adequate payment was given. But actually, this can double one's trouble in some sense, because it can make oneself excessively hot and bothered. You know, if one head-on goes and complains, you know, one's actually then bringing out one's frustration to that individual. and it's better to spend time reflecting. So the reflection could be very simple. One could think, in this entire world, one could say that there's probably a statistic that half the workers are below par, you know, either in their ethical practices or their ability to execute a job or their ability to executed in a timely manner. So now, by negotiating, it's better than taking a moralistic stance, because if one stays with thoughts, oh, there's been cheating or such, then one's causing internal aggravation to oneself. And if one were to actually express that kind of moralistic stance to the person, then naturally what will happen is there'll be a defensive reaction from the other person. So the best course is to do the reflection and then just proceed with negotiation or renegotiation if it's possible, or if one chooses that course of action. Actually, in the particular situation I went through, there was a choice not to proceed with further negotiation, but it would be the natural course. So there's certain principles for negotiation, and one of those principles can begin with complimenting a person on what that person has done that is right. So you could say it's human nature not to be able to resist some flattery, even if it's blatantly insincere. There's just flattery sort of, again, I guess, stokes the ego. It's difficult to resist. So now Vasudev himself, he found some fact of Kamsa that allowed his compliment to be somewhat honest. So he said, "My dear Kamsa, you are the pride of your family, the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities." So certainly there must have been those that praised his qualities. he is a member of that family. I mean, but, you know, it's compliments, stoking the ego. "You're the pride of the Bhoja dynasty, and great heroes praise your qualities." So this is a method of negotiation. And then, because Vasudev is skilled in these negotiation principles, he asks the question, this is right in the beginning, even prior to this internal contemplation, he asks the question, "How could such a qualified person as you kill a woman, your own sister, especially on the occasion of her marriage?" So Vasudev, he's glorified Kamsa's qualities. So this is the principle in diplomacy, in negotiation. It's the principle of Sama, that's the name given to it. You know, complimenting someone, glorifying their qualities. And there's pacification with kind words, which invokes some sort of relationship through the glorification of those qualities. So he's invoking relationship. You know, you're the pride of the Bhoja dynasty. So this is to allow for some entrance for communication. So it's a negotiation principle. And he says, "You're a brilliant star in the Bhoja dynasty." then he employs dissension, which is called Beda. It's also a principle of negotiation. and the words used were hanyat striyam, which is, "How can you kill?" So implied here is a second principle that Vasudev is touching on. It's the principle of dana. Means that there's personal gain in helping others. So he's implying this in saying, "How can you kill?" Because what his reasoning is, though Devaki is going to bear your killer, you will gain fame by not killing her since she's a woman. So he's drawing on this principle of personal gain in helping others to try and encourage Kamsa to move in the right direction. So sparing her life is therefore helping, or it's going to help others. So this is, you know, Vasudev being very skilled in this these principles of negotiation. There's, of course, another facet to Vasudev that one can't overlook, and that is that he exemplifies yogic perfection in Krishna consciousness. So this is a whole component that Kamsa could not possibly have any access to. Because unless one is Krishna conscious, it isn't possible to control one's senses so perfectly. I mean, especially in such a dire situation that required very expert intelligence in order to stop a very brutal action. I mean, it must have been, you know, a few seconds that it would have taken for that brutal action to be performed. So it required superior intelligence and superior control of the senses to be able to halt, especially a particularly sinful person like Kamsa, who, one of the things that's highlighted about him is that he kept the company of rakshasas, meaning man-eating entities. So that was his group of associates. So he couldn't give up that intention to kill Devaki because of the association he kept. His associates, for them, it's common to kill and consume flesh. Those were his associates. So it was very difficult for him to give up the intention to kill. So it required extreme intelligence and mental control on the part of Vasudev. Now, there's an example of Durvasa Muni, who's a mystic yogi, and he becomes angry with Maharaj Ambarish because Maharaj Ambarish had drunk water to break an Ekadasi fast and doing it on Dvadasi. And this taking of water was done just prior to, so Durvasa Muni had arrived, Maharaj Ambarish extended himself to feed him, but Durvasa Muni went to the Yamuna River to perform some ritualistic ceremonies where he was meditating on the impersonal Brahman. And then in the meantime, Dvadasi came and it was time to break the fast. So Maharaj Ambarish intelligently thought, okay, the way he can both satisfy the breaking of the fast and also not break the religious principle of feeding the Brahmanas first was to actually just take water, because taking water is breaking the fast, and as well, it's considered not eating. So this was the solution he found. But when Durvasa Muni returned, because he's a mystic yogi, he understood that Maharaj Ambarish had taken the water. And so he actually became angry. So he wasn't able to control his senses. And he started to act as somebody who was entitled to get what he believed he was supposed to get, which was, as a Brahmana, he's supposed to be served first. So in that situation, Durvasa Muni, he expressed his anger. And these were his words. Just see the behavior of this cruel man. So he's addressing the king, a very renowned, elevated Vaishnava. He's not a devotee, these are his words, he's not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion. So this is from the ninth canto. So this is that kind of example of, you know, the internal angry thoughts, but he immediately put them out and he directed them at the saintly king. Now, Durvasa Muni, actually, his face actually became red with anger, and he then proceeded to uproot a bunch of hair from his head in his anger, and he created a demon that resembled the blazing fire of devastation, just to punish Maharaj Ambarish for having taken the water prior to feeding him as a Brahmana, because he had this sense of entitlement. So this was how he dealt with things. And then one looks at how Vasudeva is dealing with things. Because Vasudeva is fully Krishna conscious and he can control his senses, that's the reason that Vasudeva is able to use his intelligence to its full capacity in order to be able to determine what's the correct path. And this is mentioned in the 52nd verse, which was read yesterday. There was no purport to it. But after this, thus considering the matter as far as his knowledge would allow, Vasudev submitted his proposal to the sinful Kamsa with great respect. So he's used his capacity to the fullest. He's reached his conclusion of what proposal he's going to present to Kamsa to try and avert this danger. and this connection that's there between the control of the senses and being able to use the intelligence, that's actually made by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter in the 61st verse, where Krishna says, one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. So Vasudeva is exemplifying this person of steady intelligence, and I'm going to read the Sanskrit of that particular verse. Tat sarvani samyamya yukta mat paraha vasehi yasendriyani tasya pragna pratishtita. Now there's a further point of elaboration on that can be there on this point of Vasudev having his consciousness fixed upon Krishna. Because as Srila Prabhupada says, according to the arrangement that's already, it's already foretold that Kamsa was, that Krishna was to appear through Vasudeva and Devaki. So to kill Kamsa, Vasudeva had to do everything to save the situation. So he's thinking way ahead. So Vasudev did everything possible to save his wife for the sake of begetting Krishna. So he's understanding what's the important thing to focus on. He has to do everything possible to save his wife because she is going to bear Krishna. So that is what Vasudev is focusing on. So this was using his intelligence to determine the correct path. That's the goal he has to achieve. And so Vasudev, he negotiates again with Kamsa. So these are all in split seconds, but this is only possible with that great control of the senses that the intelligence can be used so incredibly well. So he negotiates again with Kamsa. He praises the most sinful person. The word used to describe Kamsa as papam, so most sinful person. I mean, we hear who his associates are, and here he's ready to commit this violent act. Can't even give up the intention to kill. It's so strong in him. So again, we see the consciousness of Vasudev fixed on Lord Krishna. Because there's this description in the verse of today. his mind is full of anxiety. So he's extremely anxious because he knows everything hangs in the balance on being, on his being able to somehow save the situation. So his mind is full of anxiety. But externally, he smiles. I mean, what control? And he knows what needs to be done to manage this very sinful Kamsa. So the external is to show Kamsa that he's internally satisfied. This is how he's presenting himself to Kamsa. But the reality is that internally he's really suffering. And this is Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this particular verse, pointing out that this is the emotions that were actually present in Vasudeva's mind. He's actually internally really suffering, but externally it's a smiling demeanor. So the external thing he does is to make a proposal to Kamsa. And this is, in fact, employing another principle of negotiation. And we know what that proposal is going to be because it was part of that internal contemplation. So the second principle of negotiation, of almost finding a way to agree with somebody, is a way to disarm the person. So so Vasudev finds a way of agreeing with Kamsa, no matter how absurd Kamsa's logic may be. I mean, it's pretty absurd logic. Let me kill this woman right away because the eighth child of this woman is the child that's going to be killing me, so I'm going to eliminate the bearer of that child right now. So, so Vasudev, he's going to verbalize in his negotiation one of those intentions that he'd gone through internally to, because he's focusing on one of my sons is going to actually be the cause of the death of Kamsa, but that son is Krishna. So for the birth or the appearance of Krishna, I have to do everything possible. So this is the logic that is going on internally in Vasudev's mind. By delivering all my sons, so this is his thought, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. And perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth. Or, since he's already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. So this is the internal contemplation, which was recounted in the 49th and 50th verse. So it's very internal. He's contemplating what proposal, or he's contemplating what course of action he can take verbally with Kamsa. Now, Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he says that Kamsa, Vasudev, at the time of having this thought, had in fact been exercising his judgment through his intelligence. So this is the intelligence working. He's examining this argument that I've just presented, which were the thoughts of Vasudev. His intelligence is like this. Actually, this isn't proper. Because, you know, he's going to be handing over his sons to be killed by Kamsa. So he's thinking, this isn't proper. So hypothetically, he examines different possibilities. So this is one of the possibilities, hypothetical possibilities he examines. If I do not have any sons, there's no need to worry. If I have sons and Kamsa has not died by then, it is certainly improper. So he's thinking, you know, if I do have the sons and I'm now offering to, that Kamsa can kill my sons, it's not really proper to do that. But I must save Devaki now. So it overrides the improper aspect of the proposal is counterbalanced with the thought that the immediate danger has to be averted. He has to save Devaki's life. Then he considers a second hypothetical situation. If Kamsa dies before that time, then there's no need to worry. So there's that possibility too. And then he considers a third hypothetical situation. the opposite may happen. If I give my sons to Kamsa, they may become strong and kill Kamsa. And then he thinks, but how can an infant son kill such a strong person such as Kamsa? But he's considering these hypothetical situations. Now, this is the question that's going to be answered. How can an infant son kill strong Kamsa? That's the question that's going to be answered in the text coming up, and we're going to hear the whole narration. Because a time does actually come, much later on when Uddhava is visiting Nanda Maharaj, and he gives news of Kamsa's death. So the time does come where Kamsa is killed. And he also refers to Kamsa as sinful. And this is how Nanda Maharaj, this is the future that one can look forward to. Nanda Maharaj, or Uddhava tells Nanda Maharaj, because of his own sins, the sinful Kamsa has been killed, along with all his brothers. He always hated the saintly and righteous Yadus. So we're going to hear through the narration how that question is answered, how an infant can kill Kamsa, and how it all comes to play itself out. So this is Vasudev's contemplation. This was his verse today where I've tried to highlight, you know, this hypothetical, he's examining different hypothetical situations and deciding on a particular course of action that he's going to communicate verbally in order to halt Kamsa, and the intelligence he has to use to actually weigh up this choice that he has to make, that he considers is not really proper to be offering to have his sons be killed by Kamsa, but he has to take care of the immediate situation. So I've tried to highlight something of the thoughts that came in relation to this verse. If there's any particular thought to expand the discussion, I'd be delighted. And if there isn't, that's also in order.
Hare Krishna Masterji, thank you for your class. I really appreciate that last point. When you put things in perspective, Kamsa was afraid of an infant. And so I appreciate that point. But my comment is related to the verse today in Prabhupada's purport particularly. He was mentioning that Kamsa was willing to kill his sister based on an omen, otherwise known as a rumor. And sometimes we're also, we see in the material world that people are willing to kill others' reputations based on a rumor. And Prabhupada, in his purport, Prabhupada says that Vasudeva did whatever he could do to save the life of Devaki, in much the same way the devotees do everything they can to save reputations of devotees they're appreciating. And so that's, we see it in the material world. So there's one rumor I heard recently. The rumor was is that every day, the devotees are dressing the deities so nicely. I heard a rumor that every day Vishwakarma and the other cooks are, you know, making so many wonderful prasadam for the devotees. I heard a rumor that every day Mother Rohini and our sisters are making so many wonderful garlands and showing so love to all the devotees, regardless of their nationality, creed, color, or whatever. And I also heard a rumor that every day people like you, Mother Krishna Arshad, giving wonderful Bhagavatam classes. And these rumors are true. Not that I heard a rumor, I heard this gossip about this devotee, I heard that gossip about this devotee. There's a quote that says, we should be generous with our compliments and stingy with our complaints, free with the honor and withhold the dishonor. There's enough gossip, slander, and talking badly behind people's back. Let's develop the habit of talking good behind people's back. Why? Because bhakti swabhav agya dosha shamakari, Krishna swabhav bhakti ninda sahite na pade. If we don't like glorifying devotees, then we should get used to receiving major reactions for our offenses. That's what this verse says. Krishna doesn't tolerate offenses against his devotees. And so there's a pastime that essentially highlights where it was one person had every reason to spread a rumor. This is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anshya Leela chapter 5, the chapter of the title is called Pradumar Mishra, takes instructions from Ramananda Roy. In that pastime, Pradyumna Mishra approached Lord Chaitanya and said, Lord Chaitanya, I want to hear Bhagavatam for you. And Lord Chaitanya says, I don't know anything about Bhagavatam. Why don't you hear from Ramananda Roy? So he went to the ashram of Ramananda Roy, and he saw that Ramananda Roy was actually massaging naked women with oil all over their body. And so he was confused, like, why would Lord Chaitanya send me over here? You know, he's the absolute truth. So then he approached, he didn't spread a rumor. He approached Lord Chaitanya, you know, for clarification. And so Lord Chaitanya essentially said, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see. Although Ramananda Roy may be a pervert on the outside, he is a pure devotee on the inside. Don't judge a book by its cover, because you may miss out on a great story. And so Ramananda Roy, he wasn't horny. He didn't get any erection. Why? Because he thought of himself as his original Swarup, which is a maid servant of the gopis in the spiritual world, nor is he gay. So Lord Chaitanya essentially explained these points that, you know, you can't judge all things circumstantially. So that's kind of my comment, that we should basically, that's what my disposition is that based on all these teachings, is that we should have developed this humility, how to glorify devotees. There's so many wonderful devotees. I'd like to glorify many devotees. One person I would particularly like to appreciate for now is Sunny Prabhu. Sunny Prabhu distributes books every day. He actually distributed on Divine to one lady whose parents owns a shop on Divine, Indian lady. She's young, like in her late 20s. He actually sold all of Prabhupada's books to her, except the Srimad Bhagavatam, and which is, he probably did that already. I'm unaware of it. So many glorifying things. So basically, there's so many wonderful things to appreciate devotees. So if I did have to ask a question, how to keep things in perspective, that if we're on our deathbed, like Devaki, or on our deathbed, like Parikshit Maharaj, on our deathbed, like Bhishma Dev, you know, somebody asks you, you know, any last words on your deathbed? Yes, you know, I heard a rumor about a devotee. How to keep things, these petty, you know, nonsensical things, you know, we hold them in such great elevation. But if we were on our deathbed, if we had cancer, we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't be so devoted to spreading rumors. So what are some steps we could do to give up this this demoniac mentality, which Krishna says in many places? So maybe if I had a question, that would be it. So thank you.
So what I understood, you were looking at situations that are observable externally, be it the dressing of the deities, be it the making of garlands, be it the giving of classes, and you are saying somebody could be hearing those activities go on, and the person could consider that as a rumor, but then actually those things do go on. Then you were looking at somebody actually, you gave an example from Chaitanya Charitamrita of a devotee going to hear Bhagavatam and then finding that the person he'd got sent to was busy massaging young woman. So, you know, therefore, but his response had been to go and question Lord Chaitanya on that person's character. So you were actually asking, how does one go past what you termed a demoniac mentality of spreading rumors? In fact, even giving up that kind of mentality to do so. So that one's not even taking that to that kind of mentality to the point of, you know, when one's in a very dire situation of having to leave one's body. So, well, I guess, first of all, one would have to make a distinction between rumor and fact. So rumor implies something that is a half-truth or perhaps even a figment of imagination. Something is said about somebody's character It's not known if that's a fact or not a fact. So therefore one can term it a rumor, or a particular action that's something may be said about somebody performing an action, but it may not be known whether that's a fact or not a fact. So then one can call it a rumor. That's something that's communicated about a person's character, about their action, then circulates, but it's not known the source. It's not known if it's factual. That could be called a rumor. There's nothing to confirm that, and it's not even known what the origin of it is. It's unknown. Then, in contrast to that, is a fact. So there may be certain facts about a person's character, at least that behavior that's regularly indulged in, that one would have to acknowledge this behavior belongs to that person, or this particular action is repetitively done by a person, so then it's a fact. That person performs that action regularly. So then you're making a distinction. Something that's actions and behaviors that the person regularly performs, regularly does, and it's a known thing. Some things, and versus the rumor kind of actions or character traits, which can't be confirmed, one doesn't know the source of it. So the fact is, if one looks at the fact part, let's say that some action and some behavior is not reputable, for instance. So it's a little bit more hidden. So not everybody will know about that repetitive action or that repetitive behavior. Certain persons may only know. So that kind of private information or information that's not generally known is something that then would cast doubt on the character of the person, say if it's not reputable action or not reputable behavior. If one were to be exposed to something unsubstantiated in behavior or action about somebody that then reflects poorly on the person's character, you pointed out exactly the example given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One tries to actually go to a knowledgeable person or a person who would have access to information on the character or behavior of a particular person, somebody who oversees people, who has a broader view of the community, to check on that information so that at least one can actually put to rest one's own distress because one's not willing to accept that something that looks like it's harmful to the character of somebody one is thinking of. So one checks on that. So a rumor has come one's way, one doesn't know the source, one doesn't know if that substantiated the behavior or the actions that are attributed to a person. One then takes the proper course of action for one's own peace of mind, and one goes and checks with a reputable person. So one asks. If one doesn't trust anybody, one prefers to just not attend to it, one then has to take the responsibility for one's own internal feeding of distress that one is doing oneself. Like, oh, how can these statements be made about somebody? Why is such a thing being done? What a terrible rumor. If one does that, one is then doing exactly what exacerbates one's own distress. Then it's not the fault of the rumor, it is one's own fault for actually feeding something internally without taking the appropriate course of action, which is to go and check with a reputable person. Is this actually so? Naturally, sometimes one may not be able to check with the person whose character is in question. It may be more delicate, but one can go to a reputable person and check on that. And that is what was done. Lord Chaitanya was checked with in terms of some questionable external behavior. So go to reputable person. Now, if one oneself is a person who is commenting on the behavior or character of somebody else, and one has to look at, is this being done for the benefit of the person that one is communicating this behavior or character to, or is it something slanderous? So if one is communicating something on the character or behavior of another person and is done with the intention to draw light on something with a specific purpose, like, please be aware of this. It's a very important integral detail. Please have this understanding that the caution has to be exercised. Then that is something that's being communicated to another person that is with the intention to help the person who's receiving the communication. You know, may not be aware of this fact. Please bear it in mind. It's something that you may not know. It's something to consider. Maybe you don't want to hear this. Maybe you're not interested in it, but just know this fact exists. When you want to explore it, you know, you can consult again. So that's if one's actually giving information with the intent to help somebody. If, on the other hand, if one is a person who actually likes slandering with no reason, then that's a more serious thing. Then one would actually have to examine oneself and actually think, why is there the necessity to slander somebody, their character, their behavior? What is it that I need to gain from this? One would have to examine that. So some internal work needs to be done. Why do I have a slandering nature, or a nature that, you know, causes me to slander others? So that's internal examination. So your question, you know, requires this kind of making distinctions and then carefully considering, is it one's personal behavior one's looking at, or is it somebody else's behavior one's looking at? Is that person a natural slanderer, or is that person actually communicating something that is truthful with the intent to be of assistance to oneself? So, yeah, and if it's oneself that one is dealing with, then again, one would have to look at what is the intention of one saying something about somebody's character or behavior. What is that intention? And if one acknowledges that actually one is a natural slanderer, unfortunately, if one has that kind of you know, strength of mind to acknowledge such a fact about oneself, then one would have to look at what it is that one's trying to achieve through that kind of behavior and seek help oneself, because help would be needed if there's that kind of streak in oneself to try and destroy others. But yeah, that requires a lot of internal work. I mean, to actually, for any one of us to acknowledge a deep fault in ourselves is very difficult. It's very, very difficult. And it's usually a close friend or a superior to one that can guide one to at least become aware of something. But difficult things in oneself, nobody really wants to look at. That's a very difficult thing. So one can go almost to one's deathbed if one doesn't have the association of persons who care for one, that want to at least draw one's attention to, you know, this is something that they give little hints and try and help one become aware of that bad quality or that bad habit in oneself. So, yeah, that's a response as best I can, looking at it from different angles.
Thank you for the class, Mataji. Yeah, that's the difference between diplomacy and hypocrisy. No, rumors and gossips are always bad intended, although comes was openly a demon. Vasudeva knew him for years. He used diplomacy. He used the best of him to calm him down and take the Lord's fate of the whole story. But in our days, within our congregation, these kinds of gossips and rumors are absolutely unacceptable. You know, shouldn't be happening. We are already in the path of getting clean and liberated and always struggling to be closer to God, and things happening of this nature are just simply unacceptable. So what I want to say.
Yeah, well, something that is circulating needs to be examined. You know, one could say, is there a grain of truth in a rumor? So something slanderous or something not thought of. So it's good to go and check with somebody reputable, because either it'll happen like Jai Baladev was describing, you know, one's actually always feeling upset, you know, this rumor's been, or I'm hearing this rumor, or these things are being said about the behavior and character of somebody that I care for, then, you know, I'm getting agitated. How can this rumor be going on, you know? And then always feeling agitation in one's mind. So best to calm oneself and go to a reputable source and find out, is there some grain of truth in this that's been said about the behavior and character of this person? So one has to come to calm oneself down first by doing the appropriate action. And I mean, Vasudeva is an example of, you know, doing the appropriate action. you know, some contemplation, you know, one considers what one knows of a person. One actually considers what's known in the general community about a person, and see if things match up. If there's some big gray area, one may need to actually check on that, because maybe then one can actually be of better assistance to a person if one knows some salient fact about a person's character or behavior. Or if one knows this, that particular fact can confirm it, then also one can actually be more at peace oneself. Okay. Sometimes one has to adjust a picture one has of another person. So in all senses, knowing the truth is a very good thing. It's nothing to be afraid of. And Kamsa was a person who actually flourished with trying to destroy anything that obstructed his path. So one doesn't want to behave like, you know, a Kamsa, that, you know, you just eliminate things that may be the truth. I mean, that's ridiculous. Best to just look at the truth fairly and squarely in the face. Maybe you have to do an internal adjustment in terms of your view of someone, but that can be helpful both for that person and oneself. So always best to check. Yeah. So one eliminates personal disturbance, and one also gets a more accurate picture or makes a necessary adjustment that's needed. So, because there are gray areas, I mean, we are in a public place, and persons come bringing their entire history with them. We don't know the entire history. We see what's presented in the immediate, and somebody who's more skilled may already have explored what is the history of that person, because certain things start to emerge because the person's coming into an environment where the truth gets exposed. It can't be hidden. Somebody may already have seen that particular truth. So best to go to a reputable, stronger devotee and find out, so that one can also act appropriately and in line with what's needed to assist somebody bringing an entire history with them that may in fact be a very dark, difficult history. So rumors, if they're unfounded, yes, I would agree with you, Keshav Kishore, that wouldn't be a very wholesome way to function. You know, just saying things without it having any basis. But if something is said that is with the intention to draw one's attention to something, then one has to be alert, not close to it. Because after all, one doesn't know the entire history of every member coming into the community. I mean, it's a place of purification. So all that dirt starts emerging, and why one is able to manage all that dirt, one's sinful reactions, is because one is in the protective environment. So it would be foolish to actually think that one must just eliminate something that one hears. Better to find out, because then one can adjust oneself, one can adjust one's view, one can be of better assistance, one can be more in line with what needs to be done. So the truth is not to be avoided. It's to be looked at. Yeah, so that's just a response to your thought. So if there's nothing else,
Sorry, it is out of time. Thing is that what Jai Baldev told, I have to, thing is that, first of all, Lord Chaitanya says, Asasanga Satyaga, Ehi Vaishnava Achar. First and foremost duty of a Vaishnava is to disassociate with a avaishnava, means asasanga, bad association. That's the first rule of for a devotee. Even like same Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned that even Lord Chaitanya refused to see King Pratapudra, although he was a great devotee, because he had some position, power, because, you know, king, he was a king who is actually, all the kings, they are involved with so many things, you know, like they accept a lot of abnormal things, you know, they deal with all those. That's why Lord Chaitanya refused to see him. And so here the question is coming, another also, Ramananda Rai was massaging with oil with that his position. One must see, Lord Chaitanya gave certificate, Lord Ramananda Rai is the best of devotees. So we cannot do, there is a two word Prabhupada used to say, Anukaran and Anusaran. Anukaran means to follow, Anukaran means to imitate. We cannot imitate higher personalities. No, we cannot. And we have to follow his instructions. Like Anusaran, to follow his instruction. So again, you take the instance of in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he was telling, narrating, that Chota Haridas, what happened to him? He was an exalted devotee. But in time of Kirtan, he just looked towards, his eyes went towards a beautiful girl. So Lord Chaitanya could know from by the heart. Then he refused to see his face. You know, what happened? Then he committed suicide, so because of lack of association with Lord. So problem is here, of course it is a material world, but the thing is that we have to follow whatever. We suppose I am very good inside, according to him, but I am associating with women, I am changing women. So where is the question of associating such bad character guys? And also another thing, okay, this is about what? And today's class, you can see the in the purport, Prabhupada has written very nicely. One word is there, must act, must. One word is there, must act, you know, depreciously when you are in danger. That's what I want to give emphasis on, that word, must. Because you have to save your life, you know, in dangerous position. And also in the purport, Prabhupada has mentioned that one should act duplicitously for the best interest, for the Krishna's interest, for his interest. He has written the word his. One interest means for Krishna's interest. One can adopt anything for Krishna's interest. So that is the point.
Thank you for sharing your two thoughts. The first thought that has to do with looking at external behavior and looking at how external behavior also indicates something that one that sometimes needs adjustment, which is what you were pointing to. So you were particularly looking at the example of the purity of Lord Chaitanya, where even a devotee, and the particular issue here was the association with woman. So like a king could be somebody who certainly has many wives and is involved in all kinds of material activities. So Lord Chaitanya was refusing to see King Prataparudra. And you also gave the example of Chaita Haridas, you know, his eyes moving towards a woman, and so Lord Chaitanya, you know, banishing him. So there's a personality who's trying to educate how to actually behave, and that's what you were drawing attention to, that one has to examine internally, okay, is my own behavior up to par? That's what I understand you were drawing attention to. And so, of course, as you said, it's very difficult to imitate the behavior, certainly of somebody like Lord Chaitanya, where, you know, one is so pure and perfect that there's, you know, one can act in such a decisive, clear manner for the purpose of educating. So, I mean, Lord Chaitanya's in that position, but certainly your question is a good one that you raised. Should one not be examining oneself and one's own behavior, just taking into account something of this example of Lord Chaitanya, and particularly in relation to the topic of pursuing persons of the opposite sex? You were bringing that up. So that's quite in accord that one should always look internally first. That's a very good point. And the second thing you were just highlighting was your appreciation of Srila Prabhupada's point that one could act duplicitously for Krishna. I took that through the course of the class of what Vasudev was doing, and sometimes even something appears duplicitous, but when it's coming from a very pure person such as Vasudev, it's actually just understanding, which I try to highlight, the principles of negotiation, or trying to make a terrible situation come right. So he was using knowledge. So even then, he wasn't acting really duplicitously. He was acting in accord with principles of negotiation. So it's a very controlled person. So I think one can't take the generalized statement there of Srila Prabhupada and, you know, think, oh, this means, you know, one can do whatever for Krishna. Not like that. I mean, a person in knowledge understands what you do in a particular situation, and if diplomacy is required, then using the proper strategy. So that's what I try to highlight. It's still very controlled. So thank you very much for your kind participation. It has gone a little over this morning. My apologies. Thank you. Jai Prabhupada ki jai.